All right, hi everyone. Hope you're all doing well. Good to see you. Hi Susan. Hi everyone, hi Lisa. Great to see you all. I'm just letting a few folks in here as we get started. Thanks for being flexible. We have, we're on the road. We're at my sister's house right now, and Madeline is here. Here she is. She's knitting away, knitting up the storm. And so, making wrist warmers for everybody. So good to see you all. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and get started here. So this is Dr. Will Tuttle. This is our third Thursday for December 2021. And because of a prior engagement, we are on for Friday, December 17th, instead of December 16th, like it normally would be. World Peace Diet circle call for facilitator trainers and mastery program people. So it's great to see you, as I was saying, and we are in just a little bit north of Orlando in Florida. I have quite a lot to share with you about our recent adventures, which I'd like to dive into, and also we don't have any special guests this time. So I was thinking it would be especially good time if you have questions you'd like me to respond to, or you'd like to have other people respond to besides me. That's great. So I think we're good. If you have any questions, press star 6. That will unmute your phone and you can talk. And if you'd like to send me a message or anybody else, we have the chat is open, so just let me know if my volume is not good or any other technical problems. It's good for me to be aware of that. So please let me know how it's all going, if there's anything technically. And otherwise, we can go ahead and begin. What we normally like to do at the very beginning of our call is to have a short meditation prayer time. And I think it's great to just start with turning our attention within. So please feel free to turn off. If you'd like to leave it on, that's great. Or either way, if you want to turn off your screen or leave it on, either way. I'll leave mine on. And we'll go ahead and just take some time to get centered for a few minutes. This is not such a long meditation like we normally do on the first Thursday, our meditation time, a briefer one, to remember, to recollect. I love that word, to recollect ourselves and to reinvigorate ourselves and to re-inspire ourselves. I love the word inspire also because it has the word in and the word spire, where we get the spire that reaches towards heaven, of course, on a sacred building. Comes from the same root as the word spirit, which is the same root as the word breath, to breathe together. So we're breathing together, and to breathe together is to conspire. It's another great word. We have this wonderful conspiracy where the vegan conspiracy of breathing together to bring compassion and kindness and sustainability and freedom and respect for the sovereignty of all living beings, respect for the community of all life into planet Earth. So we're just taking a moment now as we begin our time to raise our vibration to a higher level a little bit, if that's at all possible. Unless you're already so high, you couldn't go any higher. But I think that's one of the key points, is to just remember our true nature, remember the truth, that what we are was never born, that what we are will never die, and what we are is eternal and always free of the nature of infinite life, awareness, understanding, and always in unity with the source of our life and with the manifestation of all living beings. whatever the outer evidence may be to our physical senses or to our rational mind, it's good to remember that there's a deeper reality that is ever present. And there's that old acronym, FEAR, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. So we don't allow the false evidence that is appearing to have reality for us in our lives. We allow our minds to open to the truth of being. So let's just begin our time together this month with gratitude and giving thanks for the unique and beautiful being that we are, the being that is right now inhabiting this consciousness that we say, I am, that is the one I'm referring to, the one with this unique perspective on the world, memories and dreams and aspirations, awareness with a vehicle that we are using to help navigate and to bring into action our aspirations and feelings, our ideas, our creative impulses, our love, our joy, and our empathy. So we give thanks for this unique being that we are. And we give thanks for the infinite celebration of life here, of all the other millions and billions of other expressions of life, the whole human family on this great adventure of awakening and the massive challenges that we're facing right now, and the whole family of animal beings that we see around us celebrating their lives in the sky as birds, on this beautiful earth as land animals, on the rivers and oceans as marine animals, of enormous size, from whales and elephants down to absolutely tiny little beings that are all around us and within us, knowing that there are communities within communities within communities, and that we are ourselves in many ways a community. We're part of larger communities. We're made up of myriads of smaller communities, all with enormous intelligence, working together and cooperating in a tremendous, magnificent symphony of being, of infinite possibilities for joy and freedom and wisdom and abundance, awareness, empowerment, radiating, miraculous possibilities in all directions. So we live within a sense of gratitude. Every moment we live within this sense of appreciation for the gift of the life that we have today. Every day that we have is today, this now moment that we're sharing right now. So we give thanks for this adventure, for ourselves, for our loved ones, for the whole web of life, for all the teachings of all the traditions that help us to awaken to the truth that we are. We give thanks for all of the wonderful teachers in our lives, the people that are in our lives that are showing us as mirrors, are showing us ourselves. We give thanks for all those who have gone before us, the great spiritual masters who have shined their light, shown their light into the world, and the traditions that have been created and contributed to by literally millions and millions of people bringing their collective wisdom we can partake of these wisdom traditions and wisdom teachings and the example of the teachers in our lives who have gone before us and those who are coming, knowing that we are connected to all those in the past and in the future, and that this life flowers into the past and into the future in ways that are beyond the rational mind to understand, that we can bless both the future and the past from where we are right now, that we can awaken to the highest awareness within ourselves for the benefit of all living beings. We give thanks for the yearning in our hearts that's always present, the memory of our true nature that is always like a compass guiding us into the truth that we are, and to also guide us in our right actions for this lifetime. So let's take a moment now and just tune into that basic idea of our inner wisdom, our intuition, this inner guidance system that we have. We give thanks for this inner guidance system that is always helping us to live our unique life, our unique and beautiful manifestation in this world, as it guides animals so beautifully to live their unique lives, and other human beings, we are also guided. And so we know and give thanks that every day we awaken more and more fully and more deeply to this inner wisdom of guidance to unfold all of our potentials for the benefit of other living beings, and to savor every moment of our life, our relationships with others, with our loved ones, and with nature, and with the whole panoply of images and of awareness all around us. And as we experience this lifetime, we learn more and more fully and deeply our right and proper place in this, and that we are fulfilling our mission for this lifetime. That we have a purpose for this life, and we give thanks for this opportunity to train, to learn, and to understand more deeply what the world actually is. That in many ways this world is a training ground. We come here to learn, to give, to serve. We don't come here to get anything. There's nothing here to get, really. We're here to awaken and to heal and to help others in their healing. And so when we leave, what do we bring with us? That's the great question. And finally, we just give our deepest thanks and gratitude to the beings we refer to as animals. We thank them for their enormous patience, their innocence, their example, their heartfulness and loyalty to their mission. We ask for their forgiveness for our contribution to the harm that they are enduring and they have endured at human hands for thousands of years. And we thank them for the opportunity to serve their liberation, which is our own liberation. And now we just rest a moment in silence together. Breathing together in different physical locations, but with one aspiration, May all beings be happy and at peace. May all beings be free. May the breath that flows freely into our body and from our body connect us with all other living beings in the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood, in the spirit of solidarity and mutual appreciation, in the spirit of saluting each other with eyes of kindness and respect, with joy in each other's joy, and of working together and developing the beautiful spirit of cooperation to co-create with all of our talents and abilities a world of freedom and peace and abundance, which is completely possible on this beautiful earth. Everything we need is right here. And so finally, we just visualize the infinite web of life, a network of relations that we are embedded in. And so from our heart, the one heart that we share together, we breathe as we exhale now loving kindness into the infinite web of relations. May all beings be happy and have all of the causes of happiness. So we send forth this light of love and kindness and goodwill and benevolence into the infinite web of relations, breathing and radiating love. We see all beings drinking in the sense of being loved, of being whole and complete within themselves. And now we radiate into the infinite web of relations from our heart, the heart that we share, a feeling of compassion and empathy. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May we act with wisdom to relieve the suffering of others. So breathing and radiating compassion in the infinite web of relations, may all beings be free from suffering. And then we breathe now together and exhale into the infinite web of relations, the feeling of joy, the great joy that is our true nature, radiating joy into the infinite web of relations, the joy of being, the truth of the spontaneous joy of being. And then peace. As we exhale together, we fill the infinite web of relations with peace and harmony and the light of fulfillment and peace. Whatever is happening in the outer world, in the depths of our being, we are always at peace. Whatever is happening in the surface of the water, the deep levels, it's very calm. Abiding together in one heart, abiding in love, compassion, joy, and peace. And we see the earth now radiating, the beautiful sphere, surrounded by the light of love and compassion, joy, and peace. With love and compassion, joy, and peace encircling the earth for all beings everywhere. And so now we begin to come back together to our Zoom call where we're again, sharing our ideas and our thoughts and our feelings to help make a more conscious and awakened world for everyone. Bringing the vegan message of radical inclusion, of justice and loving kindness, exemplifying this and embodying this in our own lives to help make it manifest in the world together. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Okay, well, thank you all of you for joining us in our meditation time. And here we are. So I really, you know, want to emphasize on this particular call that this is your call. I'm here to just really try to create an open space. If you have any concerns or thoughts or feelings you'd like to go more deeply into, this is a great time to do that. And I don't have any big agenda for this particular call. I do have some things I'm happy to share with you. I think some insights. Things are always changing. We're in a very fluid situation on planet Earth, always, but I think especially nowadays, it's more probably more confusing than more confusing than probably any time we've had in a long time. The challenges that we're facing and the sense of massive shifts happening because of the COVID pandemic, I think, is really for the last almost 2 years now. So our aspiration stays the same. Our yearning and dedication and perseverance for the cause is the same. But the outer world is changing a lot. All right, so since the last time we were together, which was in November, it was the day before we left. So after that last third Thursday call, Madeline and I got into our little micro van and we headed off into our first meeting. It was kind of interesting, you know. We drove down to San Luis Obispo and we had a lecture there at this beautiful vegan cafe called Bliss, Cafe Bliss. And it was right by a stream, it was outside, but it was so fun to walk into this cafe because we're in California and we're wondering about how strict they're going to be about masks and all this stuff, and there's like nobody wearing masks. We just walked in and they were delighted to see us, and we gave a lecture there, and it was kind of sparsely attended. It wasn't a whole lot of people, but they were wonderful people, actually, who came. Really amazing group of people. And so it was a great event, and it had this kind of interesting kind of dynamic, because San Luis Obispo has been one of the places where we've always drawn a big crowd, and they have a lot of people who love our work there. They love the World Peace Diet. We've given lectures at the university there, and also at a lot of the just local venues. They have a vegan society there. And it was kind of funny, because I said that I told them ahead of time, we're giving a lecture at Cafe Bliss. Can you please put it out to the email list of everybody in San Luis Obispo? And we thought that'll, you know, help bring more people in. And of course, we ran into the situation. I'm not sure if I told you this at one point, but anyway, we ran into a situation where the main organizers said, "Well, we're not going to promote this because of we don't agree with your politics about COVID." So they just didn't say a word about it, even though we always did things together. So of course, I mentioned to them that I think it's really not a good idea to give the pharmaceutical complex so much power, because the main enemy of veganism, really, in my experience, has been the pharmaceutical complex. They torture millions of animals, of course, for drugs, but they also make most of their money. You've probably heard me talk about this. Most of their money comes from animal agriculture, either directly by selling drugs and and antibiotics and so forth to be injected into the animals, to the cows and pigs and chickens who are hyper-confined, and they need a lot of drugs for that, and growth hormones and all kinds of stuff. So they have huge profits from that, huge profits from the diseases that people have. So so I just said that, you know, it's too bad to let the pharmaceutical industry, which is getting so rich from this whole pandemic, to divide our movement and kind of harm the movement like that. But because the one thing they would like more than anything, I think, is for the vegan movement to collapse. So, but we see that happening. I think we do see the vegan movement in some ways collapsing, and because of an inability to really stand up for what veganism is, which is respecting the sovereignty of individual human beings and animals, and questioning the official narratives in our society about how we live our lives here. Not to be afraid of nature, but to feel our connection with nature, and not to be afraid of animals, but to feel our connection with animals and with each other. So, but it seems like, as I've been saying for decades, that many vegans have not, unfortunately, done the inner work to question the official narratives or to actually embody what veganism is. And so we see some stumbling around, and it's not just the vegan movement. I think it's all, really all the social justice movements are in many ways collapsing in the face of this whole thing. So that's a challenge. It's a big challenge, and we saw that happening. But the beautiful thing is that there were people there, and we had a great time, and we put the message out, and then the next day we went down to Los Angeles, and we had a big turnout actually for this workshop, which was on the Zen and the art of healthy living. And I mean, we had over 30 people came for a 2-hour, I guess it was about a 4-hour event we put on there with Lisa Levinson and the Vegan Spirituality Movement. And I think there's so much to share. I mean, there's just, you know, so much to learn, to be really healthy, to thrive and be healthy right now as vegans, and how to do that. So we talked a lot about not only what to actually eat as vegans, and but about exercise, about relationships. Madeline did some quite a bit of yoga, sort of interlude of yoga, asanas and so forth. And I did a few other. We did some other things, but the basic idea of being healthy. You know, it's really a fascinating subject, and it's not just food. Food is important, but there's many aspects to it. And a lot of the food is the food that we're actually eating with our consciousness, the kind of thoughts that we're having, the kind of feelings we're having, the kind of relationships that we're having, and whether we're really living our purpose in a way that we feel proactive in our life. All of these things are critically important to being healthy. So we should be very careful about a sort of reductionistic approach that, well, if I'm vegan, I don't have to worry, I'm going to be healthy. And then to think about what health actually is. Right? I mean, what is health? And what is disease? One of the things I keep wanting to harp on lately, because I see a lot of vegans and pretty conscious people forgetting it. They say, well, they got sick, or they caught something from somebody, or you know, this idea of getting sick, like you don't want to get sick, we want to avoid getting sick. So I just want to, again, reiterate the thought that, just for our awareness, that sickness is not something to be avoided. It's something to be embraced, and I think in many ways it's our body's wonderful attempt to cleanse. That's it. So we can celebrate it. I mean, just say, great, okay, I'm taking some time to cleanse here and not try to short-circuit the whole thing. So anyway, we talked about those kinds of things, and then the next day we went down to Orange County with Charlotte Cressy, who's a pretty well-known vegan activist, and we had a consciousness kind of event there too. So again, I think it was focused on more on how our thoughts create our reality, or how our thoughts and feelings work together individually and collectively to create our experience of life, and the importance of focusing our intentions and our thoughts in a constructive way, which I think is very important for us to keep in mind, and it goes right along with veganism. Veganism is living our lives in a conscious way, choosing what we're eating consciously, choosing what we're buying, choosing even our, I would say, our thoughts and feelings is part of that. So it's about being more conscious and being more proactive and seeing, like I said earlier in the meditation, seeing this world as a training ground. It's a training ground. We're here to train. We're here to learn and to actually work with the incredibly complex and chaotic energy here. And to try to, through that, to uncover our true nature and to help others do the same thing. Yeah, so that was great. We went the next day it was kind of neat. We went to Quartzsite, which is the largest, let me see, make sure my audio goes in and out. So let's see, okay, thank you. Let me check my audio. Make sure we've got everything in good shape. Yeah, it looks like it should be good. All right, well, I'll do my best. We don't have the greatest situation here. Thanks, Susan. Let me get higher, maybe. But anyway, so the next day we went to Quartzsite. It was kind of funny because it's a place where it's like a gigantic RV. For like $40, you can live in your RV for 6 months on the BLM land, the Bureau of Land Management land there. So we'd like to stop there. And our friends Judy Carmen, you know, Judy and Michael Carmen joined us in their RV. We were in our little micro van. And so we pulled in. It was so funny. We were just starting to make a little supper. And lo and behold, this guy comes walking out of the darkness and comes up to the back of our van with three little kids who are like 3, 6, and 7 years old. And he says, "We'd like to give you a can of beans." And it was so funny. It was so beautiful. And we said, "You want to give us a can of beans?" "Yeah, well, we noticed you're making dinner, and we just thought you might like a can of beans to go along with it." And so we said, "Well, okay, is it vegan? You know, is it, I mean, hopefully." And so the kid ran back and then to the mother and then said, yeah, everything's vegan. It's totally, there's no, nothing, it's vegan. So we just had a really wonderful chat with these people. It was a family of a husband and wife and like, I think it was 4 children, little beautiful, these little angelic, I mean, the most angelic little faces in the evening light. I mean, looking at us, these cutest little girl, I mean, just the most beautiful faces. I can hardly believe it. And they were so well behaved. They just looked at us and smiled and we talked to the father and he was saying how they just decided to move into a car. They left Salt Lake City and they're just living on the road and they've been there for like 11 months. They've been there almost just about a year in that one spot on this dirt, on this desert by the side of the road, you know, living. And they looked so happy. And the mother was, we met the mother the next day, and they school each other, they help each other, they, you know, and they're just living. There they are by the side of the road. It's really, it was very remarkable how generous they were. And of course we gave them a World Peace Diet audiobook, because I think they could very well go vegan. They were very interested, actually, in the whole idea. We talked to them about that, but it's really neat to see how people like to reach out. And there weren't that many people there. It's kind of early in the season, so it was an interesting thing to see that. And we really had a great connection with them. And we went to Phoenix and did another lecture in Phoenix, and then we had Thanksgiving in Tucson with some wonderful vegan friends of ours. And one is a college professor who basically has said he's resigning. He can't teach anymore at the University of Arizona in Tucson because they've gone crazy. He said they've just gone crazy with all of the requirements of vaccine mandates and masking and so forth. So they're going to resign. He's resigning. They're basically planning on building a vegan educational retreat center outside Tulsa, Oklahoma, starting next year. Very interesting. So they're good friends of ours. Robin Motzer, you may know Robin. She's put on quite a few events for us over the years in Tucson. And then we drove to Austin, Texas, and did another couple of events there, a big like all-day event with a raw food, and we went up from there up to Unity Village, and I think, actually, we went to Tyler, and it's so much interesting people. I mean, I guess I can't say it. There's a great spring in Austin called Barton Springs, so we took a wonderful swim there before we left, and we drove up to Tyler, where they have a Tyler Junior College. It's this huge campus, and there's a professor there named Doc. He's got this long name no one can say, so they just call him Dr. K. He's from Azerbaijan. He's a vegan. He went vegan because he had a stroke or something, and he realized that it was his diet was terrible. So he's gone vegan, and he just wanted me to speak there for a couple of years. And I was going to go there last year, and then COVID blocked the whole thing, and I had to cancel my flight. So he had us come back again, and he set up these fantastic lecture, actually, and another two of them. And it's so interesting to see how people live. You know, this guy lives all by himself. He rides his bike to the campus every day. He loves to garden. He's got this. He himself has created like three big vegetable gardens on campus, and he has all the students work together with him, growing. And he was so proud of it, growing. I could show you pictures of all this. I probably should be showing pictures. But anyway, all these growing all these vegetables of all kinds, lots of tomatoes and cucumbers and squashes and all kinds of stuff right there on the campus. Plus, we stayed in front of his house in our van. And he has a garden there too. But really life-affirming people who are doing the best they can to just help people deal with what's going on here now and to go vegan. And so there's a whole, you may have seen, I have some links actually, for some of the, he took a whole bunch of photographs. It was really fun. And then we went up to Unity Village, and I think maybe you heard that, but we got invited to Unity Village by the executive director of Unity, Unity Worldwide Ministries, to just come there and give a lecture to the staff to try to get Unity as a movement back on track with the original teachings of the Fillmores way back in the early 1910s, 1920s, up until the 1930s and 1940s. It was known as the vegetarian movement, and in many ways a vegan movement, even before the word vegan was invented. But they've completely left that. They've lost it. And so this wonderful young guy who's from Boulder, Colorado, is the CEO, the executive director, and he's a vegan. And he's also a very interesting guy. I can't say more. I'd like to say more, but I promised him I wouldn't. But he has amazing connections with a lot of the people in the health freedom movement also. So we gave a four-hour seminar at Unity Village, plus a vegan lunch to the staff, and talking about the original teachings of the Fillmores on compassion for animals and sustainability and how it's more important than ever, and that thankfully people who are spiritual are realizing the importance of compassion for animals. Of course, we'll see how far that goes, but it was the first time, actually, in 70 years that veganism, the original teaching of the Fillmores, was actually formally enunciated to the staff of Unity again. So we planted some seeds. Madeline and I felt really grateful for that. And this CEO, the executive director, and his wife brought their tiny home from Boulder to Unity Village, and they have it on the campus. So we had dinner in their tiny home, which is solar powered. It was great because we lived in a tiny home ourselves, RRV basically, 200 square feet for 17 years. And so we have a real kinship for that kind of minimalism. Living a minimalistic life where you don't need a lot of stuff, it's really fantastic. But anyway, so then we went from there down to Alabama, some good friends. He was on here actually, Bob Stagnito. He spoke here for our group about a year ago and talked about how bacteria are actually benevolent and viruses are not malevolent and so forth. So he put on a lecture for us there in Alabama in Fairhope, and then we went to the Sarasota Veg Fest and spoke at the Sarasota Veg Fest in Florida, and then we went down to Naples, Florida, and there was this big dinner, a vegan dinner in the field, organic farm, and I gave a lecture there and we had an event. And so it's so great to see, and I have to say, coming from California, once we got into Texas and Missouri and Alabama and now especially Florida, wow, it's like so open. I mean, we could hardly believe our eyes. We would go into these stores. We went into one that's really famous. It's not really a very vegan-friendly place, but it is. They do have vegan food. It's called Feed to Table, and it's vast. It's like bigger than the largest, probably three times bigger than the largest Whole Foods you've ever seen. And it's so huge, and there's a gigantic parking lot, and there was just an ocean of cars, and you couldn't even find a parking place. You know, I mean, it's not only huge, but it's incredibly popular. And they have all these signs when you go in that this is a place for freedom. And it was like a big party in there. People are shopping. They have all these different restaurants inside the store. They had one restaurant that was organic, raw, vegan. And so that's where we went. They had a rock and roll band playing the whole time. It was like a big party happening. But it just, like it was 2019. I mean, there was not a mask, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, and you never see one. Not one mask, you know. So it was really like amazing to just be in this completely different reality here. And then since then we've been going around Florida. So meeting, you know, visiting with some good vegan friends. That one couple are working with a couple other people in the Sarasota area to try to create a kind of a vegan community there. There's quite a bit happening in the world. We've just been touching in on since we left home, since we left California. So we're seeing all these things happening, and we're just thinking, it's amazing these different realities. Because, you know, yesterday, or day before yesterday, actually, we had a Zoom call with our Freedom Cell from Northern California, where we live, where they've just instituted severe mask mandates. And it was just so, like, bizarre. They're saying how they can't even go into the store without wearing a mask now. They're being really strict about it. And for us in Florida, it's like this whole other world where nobody even thinks about it. So one has to wonder, you know, what's actually going on, of course. And you all know, I guess somebody knows where I stand on this. But I think it's a testament to the willingness of people to think about what is actually happening, and to stand up, you know, to not want to comply, to kind of refuse to comply with tyranny. And I think that's really the heart and soul of what veganism is, right? It's essentially this refusal to comply with tyranny. We're not going to comply with any kind of a system that dominates and exploits beings unnecessarily. And finding a way to do that, and then of course to navigate the waters around that, so we're learning a lot, I think, as we go, and we're finding, I think, as we go along, that there are more and more people who are questioning the narratives as it gets more and more, I think, in a way, obvious what's happening. I just read today, for example, that BeyondTech's CEO, who's working, you know, partnering with Pfizer, they're doing a fast track on a vaccine for the new Omicron variant, and they're saying that it's three. You have to have three vaccinations for that, but you can't get them until you've had three. You have to have the two, and then you have to have the booster, and then you can have these three. So they're talking about already. They're saying you have to have six. I mean, can you imagine six vaccinations for something that's not even hurting anybody? I mean, what's going on here? How can this be happening? I'm just like, really, you know, I'm off the charts here on this. But basically, this is the situation we're finding ourselves in, and doing advocacy for animals, and I just feel we need to do advocacy for human animals too, and find ways to work together in this whole thing. And I think, you know, as we go along here, a lot of it has to do with our relationship with the earth and caring for the earth. Because I feel like what's being forgotten here is this massive trashing of the earth. All these drugs and toxic chemicals, they all end up in nature. All these masks, they all end up in nature. Everything ends up in nature. And birds and animals and everybody's suffering for this so much. And it's like we forgot about all that. We don't care about that anymore. I remember right before, in 2019, there was this big push to ban plastic straws, to ban shopping bags, you know. Now it's like, oh, just plastic everywhere. We don't mind plastic. Plastic's great, you know. So it's like huge steps backward, it seems like, because of this whole thing. But I do feel that in the bigger picture, we have a tremendous opportunity to make forward progress also as we begin to see what's maybe the true face of what's been hiding all along. So, Anne, I'm sorry, I know you had your hand up there, and I don't want to go on here for too long, but yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to chime in with other ways to not comply, because there are a lot of ways to not comply. And I really like Catherine Austin Fitz. I don't know.
Yeah, I think she's great. Yeah, I think she's economic brilliant. Right. Do you want to say a little bit about her?
She has been a financial advisor for many years, and she has, I can't really recall her career.
She was the undersecretary of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, under Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she has a lot of experience in the executive branch at a high level. And it was extremely successful in investments, but she also has a lot of integrity, and she left the whole thing. She saw the corruption was so thick even back then that she couldn't be in it anymore. So she left and she started her own kind of consulting firm. And I think her experience of knowing the big picture of the financial system and what the bankers are doing behind the scenes, and what she keeps saying is, It's not the pharmaceutical industries. It's the bankers. I mean, the bankers are the ones that are propelling all of this. It's all being propelled by the bankers. You know, that kind of a thing. So.
And so practical steps to take then are to get your, if you have money in the big banks, Chase being the foremost one, get your money out of the big banks.
Mm-hmm.
Support, if you're going to be banking, support the local community banks and credit unions and those where the leadership are actually involved in the community and the money stays within the community.
Right.
And then another way is to stop. She started something called Cash Fridays to try to encourage people to stop using credit cards, because we're really funding the globalists with credit cards. I've been trying to I can't always do it, but I'm trying to pay mostly in cash. And many businesses appreciate it or will even give a discount because every credit card transaction, that vendor, that small business owner is paying a little percentage to the credit card company to be able to take your Visa.
Right.
So, and then just trying to use cash as much as possible because businesses are being encouraged to go cashless.
Right.
That's a step toward slavery, losing all control of our monetary system. So if we try to use cash, try to exchange with other people, just with goods, gold and silver, bartering, the more that we can just withdraw our dependence on that whole big system, the better.
Right. I think that's a really good point. And we're the same way. We use cash almost exclusively because they're pushing a cashless society, and that's because they want everything tracked, right? It's all about tracking us, because, and then if you can, it's like livestock. I mean, I have to keep coming back to that. If we're going to insist, as I keep saying, on enslaving other animals as livestock, we're going to become livestock ourselves, and economic freedom and independence really is important. If you don't have that, you're a slave, right? If you don't have economic independence, you are a slave. You can't buy or do anything. So once we lose cash and everything is trackable, then it's very simple. and they're already starting to pass laws to make this all legally possible, quite honestly, if you just pay attention to what's happening, then you won't be able to make payments. I mean, if you don't get vaccinated, for example, or if you don't do what they want you to do, then they'll just say, well, we just shut off your credit. We just shut off your card. You know, you can't buy. So that's why the key, I think what veganism is, essentially, is a decentralized approach to living, right? It's basically empowering us as individuals to live our lives without dominating other beings. And so the more a system gets centralized, the more a small elite controls everything. And so we see that with information, energy, and food, and money, right? Those four, those are the big things, that you have the centralized authorities. They control the information, so they control the narrative. You control the narrative, you control the people. They control the food, so you can feed people toxic food, they'll be sick. You control the medical, you have a centralized medical where you can basically inject all kinds of toxic things into people and basically wear them down, shut them down, kill them off, cull them. You know, we're doing a big culling right now. And I think just harming, when you make people sick, you're not going to have any people protesting and rioting in the streets if nobody has energy, if they don't feel good, if they have a headache, and they have heart problems and all these diabetes and all these other things. They can't fight back. If they have autism, they're not going to fight back. I mean, we have a system that makes billions of dollars on disease, right? If people have cancer and obesity and all these problems, they it's very difficult for them to actually have energy to do anything. And so this is all centralized control. So this is what scientists are trying to do to animals, right? They want to make them as fat as possible, as quickly as possible, dumb them down as much as possible. That's good for profits. They don't resist. They don't fight back. They don't peck each other's eyes out. They don't fight each other. They just sit there. They're just gullible and easy to control. Wild animals are much more difficult to deal with. So you want animals that are born into captivity that don't know any different. And taking away our money, I mean, that's a huge thing. So I love what you're saying about using cash. And I think all indications are, just to be aware, that there's going to be a financial reset. I mean, that's on the plans, and they don't seem to be slowing down. So it's a good idea. I mean, we love our credit union. Yes, you know, I'm lucky to have a credit union. But I think that's a co-op, right? Money's not going anywhere except to the people. It's a cooperative, and then using cash, and then I think it's a good idea. You know, everything you're saying, gold and silver, a good idea. I don't know. I have no opinion on cryptocurrency because I don't know what's going to happen on that. I really don't know. I'm not informed enough on that. But I do think Catherine Austin Fitz, through her research. And for the research I've been doing also, that the multinational corporations are actually small. The multinational corporations are actually small compared to the big banks. The big banks have far more capitalization and money power than even the largest corporations. They are really powerful. And then the holding companies, the financial holding companies like Vanguard and BlackRock, and State Street, so you have a tiny, tiny elite that own everything, right? And so it's very important to understand that. And so they're making these decisions. And it's not anything to be like upset about, really, or to be surprised about. This has been going on for decades. It's just now suddenly we can see it happening in sort of in living color. And I think it's good to be aware of this and then to resist. That's my sense of it. But how we do that ourselves as individuals, that's the question. Anyone else have any thoughts on this? Because I think it's good to talk about. I don't know what else is more important really at this point. I think vegan advocacy is critical. We need to, because as long as we're not vegans, then we're eating animal foods and we're part of the problem, which, you know, exploiting other beings. How can we have freedom if we're doing that? So a lot of the people who are promoting human health freedom are failing that. So I think as vegans, it's very important for us to raise the awareness about the importance of liberating animals. in this whole thing. That's really the key thing. But quite honestly, you know, as some of you know, I've been someone who's questioned medical narrative for 40 years and have stayed out of the doctors for 40 years and don't use them for 40 years. So I think I'm kind of an extreme example, but I do think that it's a good practice to stay out of the medical system. You know, it's a good, as much as possible. I mean, as much as possible. I know we all have a unique thing, but as much as possible to try and be as self-reliant as we can and take responsibility for our own health as much as we can, and also for our food, and also for our energy, and for our information, and for all these things. And any other thoughts? I do want to address one thing that Susan Daftrey asked me to address, which I think kind of ties into this, so maybe I'll say that now so I don't forget. And that is about organic, the importance of organic agriculture. And one of the things that we talk about a lot is plant-based, but also organic. And she was saying she has an acquaintance of somebody who doubts that organic is kind of a big scam. You pay more money and it's not any different. So I just have to say that, yeah, there could be some people scamming the system. There could be some people, there are. I mean, I know there are some, there have been some cases. There have been people who have been caught who have been selling organic corn or organic whatever, and it wasn't really organic. They found that they were fudging the books and it wasn't really organic. So that can happen. But the actual system itself, it does have a lot of standards are in place. They've been trying to water it down. People have been working really hard that it does not get watered down. It's still not, the big companies that tried to water it down basically failed. So the standards are still pretty strict. I mean, they're strict. They're relatively strict standards that they have. And they do have people checking, and it does cost quite a bit of money to be organic because of all this bureaucracy that you got to go through if you're going to sell organic produce. So, or organic meat and dairy too, which of course we don't think about. But the basic idea is that I would say sums it all up in one word is glyphosate. And that's the problem. It's glyphosate. You know, we have a situation now where Monsanto's Roundup glyphosate has absolutely taken over. You know, it's everywhere. They use it for everything. It's just sprayed almost indiscriminately on every crop. You know, pretty much any vegetable, any fruit, any grain, any legumes, any nuts, seeds, whatever it is, they're going to spray it with Roundup as an herbicide somewhere in the vicinity or on it directly. So glyphosate is bad news. I mean, it's a broad spectrum antibiotic. It destroys your microbiome. It destroys the microbiome of the soil. That's what it does. I mean, it just stops, the plants die, and then at a worse level, at a deeper level, the soil dies. And so then they just keep applying chemical fertilizers. So you got to remember, I've talked about this before, we have the pharmaceutical industry is a branch of the chemical industry. The chemical industry is a branch of the petroleum industry, the petrochemical industry. So we have the same, and the big banks in the background, right? So the big banks own these companies. The last thing they want is healthy people eating organic food, not getting sick, and not harming the soil. What they want is people buying food that uses a huge amount of chemicals, you know, because they're... Howard Lyman talks about it. He said he wanted to become an organic farmer. He went to the bank for a loan so he could transition his agricultural operation over to organic, and the banker said, no, we're never going to... He said, you want me to give you money, and you're not going to spend your money on my chemical company friends? You know, forget it. You know, we're not going to support organic. If the last thing they're going to do is support organic. So... we've got to understand that the system is set up that there's money to be made on selling chemicals which get into the water and into the soil and into the food, which then give people cancer and give people illness, which then makes them sick so then they can get drugged and get vaccinated, right? And it's well known that virtually all the diseases that we have are not caused by bacteria and not caused by viruses. They're caused by toxic chemicals. You know, the whole polio thing. You know, polio Polio was caused by toxic chemicals that came out in the 1940s and 50s after the war. It wasn't caused by any virus. That's a bunch of lies. And so, but they say, oh, it's caused by a virus. Now we vaccinated everybody, and the only people that were getting polio were the people who were vaccinated for polio. So we have to understand, and now there isn't any polio anymore because they just renamed it. You know, they have other names for it. They have, you know, it's chemical poisoning. It's just chemical poisoning. And so there's massive profits made by the same people for non-organic food. So if it's sprayed with glyphosate, you're eating it, right? If it's not organic, you're eating glyphosate. And glyphosate is destroying the microbiome, which is so important. I was just listening yesterday. You know, yesterday, the reason we couldn't have our call on Thursday was because I was part of a conference in Taiwan. So it was 9 o'clock in Taiwan yesterday, and they had all these Taiwanese health experts speaking about vegetarianism and health. And this one guy, who wasn't Chinese, it was me, by Zoom, and this health guy was saying that the new estimate for the number of bacteria in our body is even more than they thought. He said it's 600 trillion. He said we have 6 trillion cells of our body that make up our arms and legs and everything, and 600 trillion cells in our intestine. So that microbiome, the bacteria, are critical for our health, and glyphosate attacks it. So if anyone says organic's not important, I just beg to differ. I think if you're going to be eating glyphosate, you're playing right into their whole thing of eating chemicals that are going to make it difficult to really be healthy. Because when you can't digest food properly and you start getting leaky gut and all these other problems that come from glyphosate, there's also nervous problems, there's heart problems, it's carcinogenic, I mean, that's been proven. So, you know, you're going to be giving money to the chemical industry and the pharmaceutical industry, which is one industry. As you get sick, that's who you give your money to. And they run these incredibly toxic articles. I saw an article a couple of months ago in Harvard Magazine, you know, Harvard University Magazine, say it was all about how organic is just more expensive, it's not any better, right? They're constantly blasting that message to the mainstream media. Who owns the media? Who owns Harvard? It's not the organic farmers, I'll tell you. It's big pharma. So they own everything, and people, of course, read journalism, and they think that they're getting the news, and they're just getting lies, unfortunately. And because there's no money in healthy people, right? You understand that. So, you know, please tell your friend that organic is critically important. The more we can grow our food with love and awareness, without toxic chemicals and herbicides and pesticides and fungicides that kill birds and bees and fish and destroy the soil microbiome, destroy your own microbiome. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's really important. And it would be better if it was veganic. I mean, I agree. It would be better if it was veganic, without any bone meal or blood meal or manure. But still, they're making an effort to build up the soil. That's typically the foundation of organic agriculture. They do much better when they have healthier soil, and they do that, and they do the best they can not to spray. They don't spray Roundup, and so they're not spraying glyphosate, and so they're using mulch, basically. It's usually plastic mulch to keep the weeds down. So it's more work, it's more time consuming, it costs more money, but it's so much better for everybody, and so we have to support them. To me, if it's more expensive, if it's organic, that's good. It's a donation to a healthy planet. It's like giving a donation. It's a donation to a healthy me also, right? To us. We'll be healthier too if the food we're eating is not sprayed with pesticides. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, Susan. There's probably more we could add. I don't know if Madeline, do you want to add anything to what I've been saying, or did I cover it, you think? Oh, she's brushing your teeth or something. Never mind. But does anyone have anything you want to ask about that? Madeline, do you have anything you want to add?
It's used as weed killer.
Yes.
A weed killer everywhere.
Yeah, no,
and
I know.
So
we talked about it, that.
Yeah.
I said that. Yeah, Rhonda. It's weed killer.
Yeah, weed killer. Yeah.
It ends up in the water. Yeah, so it ends up in your body. You don't want this stuff in your body. I mean, don't trust the media. I guess that's the number one thing. Do not believe anything the media says. I shouldn't say that. You can believe some things, but you've got to, like, have discrimination. I come from a newspaper family, as you all know. I understand money buys the message. Money buys the message. Pharmaceutical industry is rolling in money, right? They got so much money they can buy the narrative, and they're doing it. And some people are so gullible they believe it, even vegans, amazingly enough. All right, I'm happy to answer questions. I don't want to just rant and rave here the whole time. So does anyone else have any questions or comments? We can go more deeply into any of these aspects too, and I'm happy to just stick also with the topic of just vegan living as well, because I think that's critically important.
Tataro?
Yes. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I wonder if you heard about this. The latest I am concerned about the pharmaceutical company is doing to with the vaccine. I read an article just this week. I forgot where it is. I need to look for it. But what it is they are injecting the vaccine into vegetables and produces, so that is like talking about not informed consent, and for those of us not wanting the injection, now here we need to figure out how to protect us from them getting into food without us knowing.
Well, yeah, thank you, Lisa. You're right. I mean, that's something that's
and they're injecting it, so the vaccine into animals.
Right.
Really gets me angry. Yeah.
Well, I know, and into children. Children have like zero risk of getting COVID, and they're injecting them, and they're dying. I mean, kids are dying. I know a guy in Santa Rosa. He and his wife got vaccinated, and then they had their 13-year-old son get vaccinated. 2 days later, he didn't come down to breakfast. They went up to his room. He was dead. 2 days later, he was dead. Just dead. He was totally healthy. And this is happening so, and it's totally not going to be covered. It's not going to be covered. I mean, it's all, they say, oh, we don't know what it was. It was probably just a coincidence. So there's, this new article, I have an article, I mean, this new article, Pfizer was forced to give out some of their information of how, when they did the first 3 months, by a request, a Freedom of Information Act request, a FOIA request, and 190,000 adverse events and almost 2,000 deaths in the first 3 months that they knew about. I mean, that's absolutely unprecedented. Usually if there was 25 deaths ever, you know, within the first 6 months, they would stop that vaccine. That would never go any farther. I mean, this was like 2,000 deaths in the first 3 months that they knew of and were directly caused by the vaccine, and they just said, oh, it's very safe, no problem, everybody line up, everybody get it, we'll give you a free donut, go ahead, come on. Unbelievable, it's a mass culling, it's a culling of the herd. You know, I just read today that they're shooting 1,100 bison, buffalo, in Yellowstone Park, you know, because there's too many of them, get rid of them, shoot them, kill them off. And, of course, as you call, so shall you be called. I mean, we can't expect anything else. We treat everything like we're the Lord, and we're going to kill off who we don't want. They're just pests. Get rid of them. There's too many of them. Anyone who's gullible enough, unfortunately, you got to really, you know, really be, wake up. I mean, get savvy here, because the mainstream media is lying constantly about everything. And it just breaks my heart, quite honestly, to see how people don't see it. I mean, how they just don't see. They believe. And usually, like I say, it's the more educated. The more educated we are, the more gullible we are. I mean, it's the most educated people that are the most completely gullible in this whole thing. But you're right. I mean, the injecting of these toxic chemicals into vegetables and fruit, so you buy it and then you get vaccinated that way, or there's a lot of people who are saying that even if you get the test, they put that thing up your nose, that you're getting vaccinated. You could be getting vaccinated for sure, or in many other ways. I mean, the whole idea is that we don't have sovereignty over our bodies, right? Just like cows, pigs, and chickens, they have no sovereignty over their bodies. They tell them what they're going to do. They castrate them when they want. They inject them with whatever they want. They kill them when they want. They impregnate them on rape racks whenever they want, right? They have no sovereignty. Veganism is sovereignty over your individual life. And they're taking that away, just like we've taken it away from livestock. And if we don't see that as vegans, I'm just shocked at the perversity of the vegan movement, that people don't talk about this. That everywhere I go, I see that you can come to this vegan lecture, or you can come to this vegan dinner we're having, but only if you're wearing a mask and you're fully vaccinated. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I mean, how can people be so utterly out of touch with reality to be so lost, just completely lost in the narrative that's being driven by the mainstream media? It's going, they're not stopping. I mean, it's rolling out unstoppably, basically, and unless people really, you can look what's happening in Australia, in Germany, in Austria, all these other countries. They're putting people in prisons and camps if they don't go along with it. And they're talking about it openly, of course, in this country as well. So we are at a point, I think, where it's essential to realize, like I've been saying, that this earth is a training ground. So we can't change what's happening necessarily in the outer world, but we can change how we respond to it. How do you respond to the situation? That's the key thing. And with wisdom. And what I love is the basic idea that we can, each one of us, tune into our own intuition, our inner wisdom, and respond in the right way for us. What is the right thing? I can't tell anybody what the right thing for them to do is, really. I quite honestly can't. Each one of us knows in our heart the best way to respond to these situations. And our life is brief. No matter what we do, it goes by quickly. But it's a precious opportunity. It's a wonderful adventure. And the whole point of it has nothing to do with being safe. Nothing to do with being safe. We didn't come onto this planet to be safe. So when people say, let's be safe, right there, that should be a big tip-off. You're being enslaved. You didn't come here to be safe. You came here for an adventure, to learn, grow, contribute, to risk, to get out of your comfort zone, and to wake up and find out what's going on here. And we're not here to be safe. And I think we have to really question that narrative of security. My gosh, I mean, prisons are secure, I guess, right? Except for who's in there. So we have to.
Well, Dr. Kettle, I'm really inspired by you and Madeline making the trip across the country during this climate, this situation with the pandemic. Do you find on the road, on your journey, do you find difficulty? Like you say, it seems like everywhere you go, there's no mask requirements as strict as California. Is it, so what do you see? Because from what you observe around the country, because my friends here in Silicon Valley, I started a small vegan health freedom group, thanks to the vegan summit. But we were all talking about moving out of California, and that's why I'm so happy to see you at Karen Ramsey's Freedom Group meeting earlier before this call. And I guess we're all thinking about what solutions out there is for us to get to a place where we don't have to deal with the mandate and all these regulations.
Right. Well, I think that's a good question. And again, it's an individual, intuitive choice, I think. If you feel your calling is to find a better place. And a lot of people have done that in the past. People have left, you know, they were glad they got out of Germany in 1939 or whatever it was. They were glad they got out of whatever and got to a safer place. I don't know where you know, nowadays it's like, where do you go? Is there another planet maybe? But I think, maybe other countries could be better, or other states. There's a lot of people moving to California and Texas. I mean, we looked last year when we were here, the prices are going through the roof everywhere. I mean, everybody's moving out of the blue states into the red states. I mean, get out of the blue states as fast as you can if you value your freedom. But I think,
I was also inspired by your story of that family with the three little kids living out of their home. That's another idea that you inspire me, living out of a mobile home, and we could drive to whatever state that doesn't impose those restrictions on us, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing is really exploding. A lot of people are living in RVs, or actually just living in vans, cars, whatever. Sometimes because they have to, because of financial obligations, and sometimes because they feel it's a better way to be mobile, to be able to be in the best place at any given time. The only problem, of course, is if you're on the road, you can get suddenly pulled over at a highway check stop, and they may say, okay, you can't go across this border if you're not vaccinated or whatever. You're kind of vulnerable in that way. So,
come across that?
No, I never have. But it happened earlier. It happened last April, I guess. You couldn't go from New York into Rhode Island. You couldn't drive from New York into Florida. Florida wasn't letting people in for a while. I mean, yeah, they were blocking people. They were afraid of people spreading the disease, and so they were, you know, that's what they said anyway. But I think, it's like this unparalleled time, kind of chaotic time, where we have to get in touch with our intuition and what we feel is the right thing for us to do. And I don't think there's an easy answer. You know, it's many overtones. You know, if people, because some people say, well, this all will create these wonderful vegan communities and just be there and in large numbers. And that would be great. It's not that easy to do that. The way the financial and legal systems are set up, it's kind of hard for people to buy land together and build together and do all that. It just goes against most of our laws. But it could be possible. But then you've got the other situation where you have a lot of freedom-loving people in one place, so then you're, in a sense, more vulnerable to authorities. So some people think it's better just to stay in small groups of one or two or three people, you know. So it's, again, I don't know the right answer. I mean, you know, nobody knows. I don't think there's any one right answer. I think it's really comes down to your spiritual maturity, your basic spiritual maturity. The greatest investment anyone can make is their own mind, your own spirit. That's your greatest investment. If we have a movement of people who are deeply rooted in the sense of inner peace and just realizing that this world is Maya, this world is an illusion in many ways. It's a dream. You know, if you're in a dream, you go, oh my gosh, this monster's chasing me, help, help, help. At a certain point, you wake up and go, oh, it's just a dream. You know, it really is. I mean, on a fundamental level, we are projecting this whole thing, and it's a training ground. We're learning. So the most important thing is how we respond to the situations that are arising. And we're in a situation right now where there's some, you know, a small number of sociopaths who, for some reason, think it's a good idea to torture and kill millions and billions of human beings. And that's what they're rolling it out. You know, they're just rolling it out. They've taken over the governments. They've taken over the United Nations. They've taken over all the media. They've taken over all the banks. They've taken over all the medical, religious, pretty much everything they control through hierarchical pyramids of power. I mean, it's not that hard. It's been going on. They're putting the pieces into place for a few hundred years. So it's not, no, it didn't just suddenly happen. It's just that people got dumbed down enough to the point where they figured they could pull the trigger on the operation. So now it's happening. So it's like, you know, it's like on a farm. You know, it goes a long time, and then at one point, the cows are grazing peacefully in the field, and then suddenly all these cowboys come around and they start lassoing all the cows and taking them off to slaughter. And so now, okay, we fed you long enough, now we're going to use you for what your intention is. And suddenly they're being killed and exploited. It's sudden, but it's been lurking there as the possibility for a long time. So I think we need to mature and realize that we're not just this physical body, and not give them the power. Just don't give them the power. We shouldn't give them the power. Don't comply. Just do not comply. That's my advice to myself. I don't comply. I've never worn a mask. I'm never going to wear a mask. I mean, I'm going to do my best not to ever wear a mask. I guess I don't comply. I don't do it. I'm not going to do it. You know, I'd rather die, quite honestly, than go along with a system of violence and tyranny that's destroying the spirit. You know, the spirit is the breath. And they're not going to block my breath, and because that's our connection. That's the way we speak, we smile, we connect. It's all a big hoax. So I'm not going to cooperate with it, and I never have. And Madeline feels the same way, and there's a lot of other people, fortunately, that feel the same way. But you can't. Anybody can do what they want. You know, I just think we have to realize where this is coming from and where it's leading, and. Remember Animal Farm. Remember George Orwell. You know, the animal. there's a reason behind these mandates and all these things. All right, that's enough. Let's see. So Andy has her hand up. It's about time. Gosh, it's already an hour and a half. Thank you, everyone. I really appreciate your kind attention. The most important thing is compassion. Really, I don't have anything but compassion for anyone on this planet. I don't have any anger towards anyone. I mean, whoever, we're all playing, it's like we're on a stage and we're playing out our parts, and after the play is over, we go backstage and we say, yeah, you did a great job as the evil guy, and you did a great job as the hero, or whatever. People are wounded, they're playing out their parts, and the most important thing is to bring awareness to our own mind and heart and how we respond to this whole thing. Yeah, Andy, your hand is up. Do you want to say something? Is your computer working?
Hi. So I'm a little distracted. I'm just dropping a dog off. But so a few different things. Are you familiar with Rosa Corey, I think her name is, Behind the Green Mask, the book?
Yes.
And she exposes how, I don't know why I'm not visible here for some reason. She exposes how I believe they're going to be stealing everyone's properties and how they've been doing that. I think it's the eminent domain or something like that. So that's one issue. The other thing too is, what do you call it? Oh, bye Leo, I'll see you later. So the other issues are, you know, I've heard that some of these, fires are intentional, so I'm concerned about if people have properties, you know, if they start fires just to get them out of their properties and kill them, and then everything else I've observed, I don't know if I've told you about this before, this is like three different things going on, that doing the van life, I'm driving every day and every night, and outside while other people are locked down, and I've of course observed how since the very start of the lockdowns and this whole time, they're literally ripping apart every street and parking lot and highway and redoing them, you know, and they don't announce this on the news, and people just, you know, it's like they don't notice, they think there's, you know, some traffic, but literally construction on every single street, every highway, every parking lot, everything. And I'm sure, I feel strongly this has got to be the connection to either 5G or the driverless cars that they claim, you know, we're going to own nothing and be happy. And so anyway, three different issues. And any thoughts on any of these?
Okay, yeah, just briefly, and we're kind of running out of time, but I think Yeah, Rosa Corey and her Behind the Green Mask, I think it's very interesting. There's a lot of truth, I think, really to what she's saying, that the United Nations, I think it's the big bankers, basically, the Council for Foreign Relations and the Center, all these different, the Bilderbergs, the wealthy elite, have been setting up these hierarchical pyramid structures. They work through the United Nations, and then they work through the United States government, and it just filters down to the state level, to the county level, to the municipal level, and they have this basic template going out, and it's couched in very nice sounding terms of sustainable development, which I love. I love sustainability. I love sustainable development, but it's basically geared to driving people out of individual houses, driving people out of the countryside, and driving people out of having any control over their own real estate, like growing their own food, having a garden. They don't want any of that. They want everyone living in apartment buildings and buying their food from a centralized source, getting their information from a centralized source, and basically, it's Agenda 2030, it was Agenda 21. And like I say, it looks kind of appealing and progressive on the surface until you kind of dig in and realize that they're using language that sounds good and that, unfortunately, it makes a lot of people feel good because it sounds like, we're going to try to, save habitat for animals and so forth. But they don't. It's not vegan. It's not actually reducing the power of the big banks and the pharmaceutical and chemical industry. They're using all that. It's continuing the same thing. It's just not giving people any chance to escape from that. So I think, she was onto something there and wrote that book. And I think she just died too, which is kind of odd.
Yes, she did.
The other thing, I don't know about your theory about the digging up of all the parking lots and streets and everything. They must be doing that in San Diego. I haven't seen it in other cities that much, I don't think, but just keep an eye on it, and if you learn anything more, you can tell us about it. I really don't know about that particular thing.
Okay.
But, all right, so I think I want to, close here on a positive note. I want to thank all of you for joining us on this adventure, and it ultimately, I think on a deep level we're on the same page of basically standing up for the rights of individuals and the rights of communities together for sovereignty and for independence, for freedom, for self-expression, and for kindness and compassion and caring and nonviolence towards others, and that includes domination of the weak by the strong. So that's really the power of the vegan message. I will just close by encouraging everyone, if you can, please, to have a look at some of the resources for the December 2021 that I put up on our website. And there's some fascinating articles here that go into a lot of what I've been saying in more depth. And if you have any comments or questions as we're going along during the month, feel free to send me an email if there's anything you want me to cover. I really live for this stuff, for liberation of animals and for understanding how we can respond most effectively and wisely to the situation. So if any of you have ideas or tips or ideas to share with our community, with the World Peace Diet Facilitator community, you go to our Facebook group. You can write things there or send me an email. We can cover it in the next meeting. We always have a meeting on the first. We always have a meeting on the third Thursday, as you know, but quite often we have one on the first. But the first Thursday is typically more of a meditation meeting. So that's it. Basically, we're in, I think, quite honestly, we're in the fight for our lives right now. I can see it's not going away anytime soon. The powers that are behind us are playing really a deadly game. It's a war against humanity and people don't realize it, unfortunately. It's, cows 8,000 years ago when they started getting rounded up and started getting enslaved, maybe they didn't realize what was coming, but I hope it, I don't want it to go for 8,000 years for us humans. We need to, I think, try to stop this now before it goes farther. So we're not enslaved for the next 8,000 years or longer. And it shouldn't happen. I mean, we ultimately, we're free. We have within us spiritual powers and faculties that will keep us alive and alert. Just don't allow your mind to be taken over. I haven't had a television in 50 years. I think that's my greatest, one of my greatest gifts to myself was just not having a television, not having a radio, no mainstream media. They use it to enslave us, and it's very important, I think, to make our own news. And so I love you all. I really appreciate your all your efforts. Let's maybe just close with our, unless there's anything final, anyone have any final comment or anything you'd like to share? Because I know I talked a lot here, but is everybody complete, more or less? We still have a nice
question. Can I throw in a couple of other things, a more positive note?
Okay.
So I posted something that was really funny in different places. I don't know if you saw it. But to get laughter.
Right, right. I think I saw it. Yeah, one was a song, I think. And
well, one was the song, but then there was this one woman, maybe about our age or so, you know, sort of elderly, middle-aged-ish, and she said she's got the, it's about a one-minute video, and she says a friend of hers told her about this new COVID test. And it's absolutely hysterical. Everyone cracked up, and she's like, okay, you open a can of beer, and
oh, yeah.
Then, did you see that one?
Yeah, that's good.
So it's just things to make people laugh. You know, I do love to see, if you wanted to end on a positive note, more and more people are coming out with just funny things, goofy things, more people standing up. They're taking the time to put in this effort with music and all kinds of different things.
Right.
And they're having more courage, because in the beginning they were not having the courage to do
that. Right. No, I think that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. And it reminds me of something that Mark Twain said. You're all familiar with Mark Twain's saying about the number one most effective way to resist and fight back against tyranny or against oppression. He said, "It's you can have protests. You can write songs. I mean, you can write songs. You can write articles. You can communicate. But he says, what really works, what will absolutely destroy delusion and tyranny and so forth, is laughter. When you can actually look at it and laugh at it and how absurd it is, then it's done. It's over. Once you see it for the joke that it is, it really is a joke. It's really so pathetic and it's so funny. And I think we're starting to and it's a good thing. We're starting to actually find more and more people are harnessing the power of laughter at this whole thing in an effective way. And I think that that's a good sign too, as well. So thanks, Andy, for that. That's a good point. Let's say our prayer, our closing prayer, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We can unmute if you'd like. All right. Let's say it together. We begin. Compassion
encircles the earth
everywhere.
All beings
everywhere.
Again.
Compassion
encircles
the earth
for all beings
everywhere.
One last time. Compassion
encircles
the earth
for all beings
everywhere.
Yeah.
Much love to you all. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Look forward to multiplying the message. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, everyone. Much love. All right. Have a great month. Thank you.